Do you like movies, comic books, science fiction, and more? Then you've come to the right place. This is the Rebel Radio Podcast. You can find us at therebelradiopodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and join our Patreon for just $2 a month where you get exclusive episodes. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show. Welcome to a new episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
This is Long, the undercover dude, agent guy.
187 and the undercover cop.
Yeah.
I don't know. That was just a totally random. I don't even think that's how the song goes, but, you know, who knows. Yes, the conclusion of Cops and Mobsters Month today, or this episode. Or whenever it is you are listening to this episode. It could be at nighttime. Who knows? It could be in the wee hours of the morning, the witching hours.
Yeah.
As you listen to our warm, soothing voices.
Month in review at the end.
And, you know, it's been a good month, I think. Good episodes, good movies. A very good movie we're talking about today. And so, yeah, these theme months are fun. We do them a couple times a year. We don't like to overdo them, but they're fun when we do them. It's good to have a little formality, a little theme, I guess, you know.
I like it. I like the theme.
Yeah. I've been considering, well, we got 12 months out of the year. I've been thinking about doing a third theme month, you know. Two's good. You know, we always do the Halloween, then we do one other theme month. And been thinking about a theme month. Or like, well, we, you know, we've talked about, personally, about doing a revisiting month where we do each pick an episode of a movie that we wanted to revisit that we've already done on the show. And maybe we'll do something like that down the line. Do a like a mini month, like three episodes where we each pick a movie we want to revisit or something. Who knows? Who knows what's going on in our peddly brains?
You know? Peddly.
y'all's bald brains and my somewhat still half hair brain.
Somewhat. You definitely got more than us now.
That was a weak attempt at a shot at you guys, you know. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
This guy.
Damn it. Tough crowd tonight. How are you guys on this rainy,
good,
wet day in Houston? It's been kind of nasty today.
I have to bring something up, call myself out. Last week, I don't know why I was in such a dark mood.
You were grumpy
last week. I have no. I apologize to the two of you for bearing that brunt. I don't know why. There was just. I don't know.
Well, you know, they say that there's times of the month where like men have their men period. You know, like our hormones are down and we're a little grumpier than other times of the month. So we'll accept the fact that you were on your man period last weekend.
There was probably a full moon.
Yeah,
a full moon. Hey, full moons do affect people's behavior.
Matt gets on his man period, and every now and then when he gets passive aggressively serious about things, and you know, and then I get on mine when I'm just like, I hate people and screw everybody, you know. So
yep,
we all have our moments, so we will forgive you, Long, for
I have dishonored my family. Anyways,
but if it ever happens again, we shall kill you. seems a little harsh for being grumpy. You know, Matt will just give you a rim job or something.
You'll feel no,
never, TMI.
Never do that.
Hey, no. What you guys do on your private time? No.
So,
I feel like we should do this episode in a Boston accent for some reason.
I don't do accents.
I'm going to get those guys.
I can only say, get in the car.
The car.
That's all I can do. Get in the car.
The car.
Get in the hopper.
The hopper.
We'll talk about the accents when we get to the movie. There's some things I'm rewatching that there's some things I notice about the accents. Most of them are pretty good, but there's a couple of characters in our start realizing, like, they. Like Jack, he kind of drops his halfway through the movie. You know?
Yeah, Nicholson.
Like, wait, where did your accent go in the second half of the film?
I'm Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, so, you know. But anyway. But let's get into the show. Let's get to download this and things that we watched, streamed, played this week, and checked out, and some exciting stuff to talk about with a certain show on Disney Plus. I'm hoping you guys are caught up on that.
Yes.
And so, but anyway, who wants to go first? What did you check out, anything interesting this week besides Falcon and Winter Soldier?
I'll go first.
No, I slacked off.
Yeah.
I actually spent a ton of time on aquarium bullshit, so yeah.
Nice. I watched Speed.
Did you watch that last week?
Oh, no. That's right. That was last week. I watched The Matrix again.
Did you watch that a couple weeks ago?
I watched The Matrix Reloaded a couple weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
But I was like, I was feeling like Keanu, I guess, these past couple weeks, man. And before I passed John Wick, I passed The Matrix in my little voodoo movie log. And so I clicked The Matrix just because I wanted to see him say guns, lots of guns, and then have just walls of them come, and then he just goes into the lobby, one shoot out. But man, you know, I can't wait for John Wick 4. You know, this makes me, you know, want more Keanu and the Matrix 4. I want to see how that is. You know?
I'm definitely looking more forward to John Wick 4 than I am The Matrix 4, though.
Definitely. Yeah, if I had to pick one.
John Wick, there's still a story that hasn't finished yet. Matrix, I feel like we don't need more. We got what we got already. Yep. I mean, I'm still probably going to watch it, but I don't feel like I needed to see a Matrix 4, you know?
Yeah.
Or John Wick, I'm like, give me all the John Wick. You know, I'll take more of that. That's good shit.
Yeah.
John Wick.
The Wachowskis, I don't know, haven't had a really good hit in, since the Matrix movies. Really?
Yeah.
They had the one thing, yeah. I mean, Speed Racer.
But even it was just a modest hit. It wasn't a huge hit. But yeah, they haven't had anything. I've heard Cloud Atlas is very good. I've never sat and watched it. But even it was just a modest hit. No major theatrical hits, that I would say, are huge hits since the Matrix films, really. And and we'll see if they can return to form with this fourth Matrix film that, you know, because it's supposed to be out December, I think, on HBO Max and theaters.
And then I watched another Jack Nicholson movie, or at least part of it. Jackie wanted to watch Witches of Eastwick with Cher and what's her name? I can't think of her name.
So you didn't even watch Basinger? A good Jack flick.
Yeah. Jack Nicholson, man. He's good in everything. Kinda.
He is. That doesn't mean the movie's good.
Yeah, it doesn't mean the movie's good. But Jack's always gonna do his thing, and he's just so good, you know. And everything he does, he gives it his all. And I know we'll talk about that in a bit, but just those two outside of Falcon Winter Soldier. That's about it.
Yep. And we already know what I did. So. What about you, Mark?
I didn't watch a whole lot either this week. I've been just busy with baseball and life. I mean, I still play a lot of the Star Wars Galaxies, the Rogue server I play on. I've been playing that some.
I do my Animal Crossing dailies.
Nice.
I started watching the other day. I didn't finish it yet, though. I started watching the old Lee Van Cleef movie, Sabata. It was a modest spinoff. It was not a direct spinoff as far as The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, but it was designed to give him his own franchise back in the day because he was of the success of The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly films. And it did get a couple of sequels, and they were pretty well received. And the first one's the best one. And then I think there was like Sabata Returns and a couple more. And I started watching some of that. And, Lee Van Cleef, like I've said before in the show, he just chews up the screen. I always like watching him. And it was like $5 on Vudu, so I bought a copy of it. I just have to finish it. And it's a good movie. But other than that, man, I just, same with you guys. I got caught up on Falcon Winter Soldier, was able to watch episode 5, and came home today and sat down with Mikey and me and him, watched the finale today. And, we were texting earlier. I'm still not sure what the Flag Smashers were fighting for. but overall, I really kind of like this show. You know, through six episodes. I do felt it could have been told in a 2-hour film, just like I do in WandaVision, but I'll forgive it, you know, because I really like the interaction between Sam and Bucky. I think that's what made the show really work overall. And some big stuff happened in this finale. You know, so we're going to some spoiler territory for those that haven't watched it yet here. But I think we all knew what was going to happen when the show started. We knew what the show was designed for, and that was to find the rightful place for the Shield to end up. And we all knew from, if you've read the comics and things like that, I mean, come on, we knew it was going to end up in Sam's hands.
Yeah.
And in this episode, that's where it ends up. I mean, they kind of allude to it very much in episode 5. Conversation between Sam and Bucky at the yard where they're practicing with the Shield. They kind of allude to both their destinies, you know, that Bucky's got to keep finding himself and just doing the right thing for people, to just make amends for what all the wrongdoings he did as a Winter Soldier. Mm-hmm. And he continues to do that throughout episode 6. And Bucky, on the other hand, basically tells Sam, like, you know, I realize that I pushed you too hard to take the Shield and what it takes for a black man to wield the Shield. And they have that discussion in the yard, and it really turned the tide of the show. And, man, Marvel, you know, this show, Marvel really took some extra steps to show the legacy of, you know, the black people and black history and the way they shape the world. And they do it around the elements of the superheroes of the Marvel Universe. And I thought they did a really good job with the writing of the show to pull that off, and was really well done, I thought. And they did it in a very graceful way. The writers were excellent. You know, they didn't do it causing controversy or anything like that. It's like they said it and they did it. And I'm like, wow, this is really powerfully done. And it kind of went under the radar between all the Falcon getting the Shield stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I really do like the I like how the show is not afraid to confront
issues.
Issues.
Yeah.
For sure. And, you know, apparently in episode 3, a lot of people switched off, you know, stopped watching the show when Sam was being questioned by the police. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess that pushed a couple of buttons
here and there. I didn't even think about it, yeah.
Yeah, that's what Disney said or reported. Like, a bunch of people stopped watching after episode 3 mm-hmm. for a bit. And then, but some of them, the numbers did come back in the fourth episode or something.
Yeah.
And I really like the ending. I did kind of a bow tie for the old super soldier mm-hmm. from the Korean War, the old black soldier. What's his name? Bradley?
Isaiah Bradley.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Isaiah Bradley. You know, he got his recognition. Mm-hmm. Didn't quite correct every wrong that was done to him, because, right, you know, but it's a start.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the deal with Sharon? Is she evil now or what?
Yeah, she's selling state secrets, it looks like, to whoever she's talking to on the phone.
Probably the Flag Smashers. I mean,
well, apparently they alluded to that she was the leader of the Flag Smashers because she was a power broker, and we didn't really know it, you know. Mm-hmm. Even though she shoots Carly, Carly was her name, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, she shoots her to maybe cover things up, but they sure alluded to that. They made it sound like that Sharon is on the bad side now. So, yeah.
Unless GSP survived.
No. It's a... GSP's death looked pretty cut and dry.
Yeah.
At least, I thought he was shot in the head or something.
He was definitely shot. And he was shot. Yeah. I like seeing him again.
I don't even know who he is.
George St. Pierre, man.
I still don't know who that is. I'm sorry.
Balrog in the show.
Huh?
Balrog in the show.
Balrog in the show, but he was a really good UFC fighter. I mean, one of the best Walter Waite guys.
Oh, okay.
Just, you know, true martial artist, not ground and pound kind of guy. He could do it all. And he has his own gym, trains a lot of good guys. He's good in the role. I mean, you don't need much in the role, but his fighting is believable, and that's what I like to see. Good fight scenes.
Yeah. So so I guess Sharon's probably the new Hydra head, who knows.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it just feels right from the end of from the end of Avengers Endgame to now, you know, we knew Sam was going with the shield, and deservedly so. And Sam had to realize that, you know, what the legacy meant, and he had to think about it. And they did a good job doing that. And it was cool seeing him in the new costume, the Captain America / Falcon costume. And I like how at the end of the show, they even changed the credits to Captain America and the Winter Soldier. I thought that was really neat. It was a fun show, and you know, there's been talks there might not be a second season, but as we know in the news later, we'll talk about, there's rumors of, or word is, there's going to be a fourth Captain America film. So we'll see where they go with it, because there's a lot of story to be told there and still unfold. I mean, the biggest mystery like you said, what's Sharon going to do now? And then Julia Louis-Dreyfus's character, she's turned John Walker into the U.S. agent. At the end of the show there. So we'll see where they go with that. Apparently, Dreyfus's character appears in Black Widow, and originally the idea was Black Widow was supposed to be out already, and then she appears in this, and they kind of had to do things a little different. So So I guess she's going to have a part in the Black Widow movie too. And was it just me, or did she feel like she was kind of hamming up her character a little bit? She just felt like, I don't know.
A little bit.
Just felt at a little kind of...
Were they, you know, waiting for Walker to come out with his suit on?
Yeah, I don't know. It was weird. Her acting just threw me off a little bit or something. Mm-hmm. But one thing I do have enjoyed about the first two Marvel shows we've gotten so far is at least Disney and Marvel are sparing no expense. They look like movies on television. You know, the fight scene at the beginning of episode 5. Yeah, when they confront Walker after he had killed the guy, was excellent. It almost reminded me of Civil War, you know, where they're going with Tony and Cap and Winter Soldier going at it. And definitely big budgets. The Falcon suit, everything looked good. There was a lot of CGI in this last episode with his wings and everything, but it looked excellent. Mm-hmm. And I'm certainly glad that Marvel is not going cheap on those on the shows.
But they're well made for sure.
Yeah, but I enjoyed Falcon Winter Soldier much more than I did WandaVision for sure. Like WandaVision, I kind of give it like a B, maybe a B minus. But this, I felt like this was a solid A show. I thought Falcon Winter Soldier was really well done.
I don't know. I give it a B plus personally, really? Because the villain part of it is pretty
The villain might be
weak.
The weakest part. Yeah. Well, and yeah. That's the thing. It was more interesting when Baron Zemo was with him, because he added an extra dynamic. And then when they kind of threw him in prison in episode 5, it's kind of like left no villains that were interesting for the last hour and a half of the show.
Yeah. Marvel has a bad habit of killing their villains, you know?
Yeah, because
Zemo's
excellent. And the actor who plays Zemo does a really good job of just playing it with like this calm, cool collective. You know he's evil, but yet he's very like just chill about it, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing about Daniel Brühl, the actor. Yeah. I actually first heard about him from a German movie called Goodbye Stalin, where and he's like a very, very young actor, probably a teenager or something. And it's him and his sister, who has a mother who was in a coma for 10 years. And their mother was like staunchly pro-communist and stuff like that, and the Berlin Wall fell, and then it's German unification. So his mom wakes up after this 10-year coma, thinking that that Germany was still East Germany, and he had to try to pretend that, hey, you know, we're still in the communist regime, you know, because if she had a heart attack or gets stressed out, if she gets stressed out, she'll have a heart attack, and then she'll die. So that's why they're trying to masquerade as they're still living in the communist regime, but East Berlin is now fully westernized and stuff. So yeah, it's a very good movie. Yeah. But I highly recommend it. But Daniel Brühl, he's really good in that movie as well. If you don't mind reading English. So.
All right. But overall though, I thoroughly enjoyed Falcon Winter Soldier, and so what's
isn't
next?
That the same? Isn't that the same girl, Carly from Han Solo?
Yeah, Tempest Nest from Solo. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And so what's next? Loki from Marvel? I think it's Loki. Then the What If show comes out in the summer, which is animated. Mm-hmm. And then I think the rest of them are all in the fall. Hawkeye and Ms. Marvel. I think that's all coming later this year. So So yeah, good stuff. Well, let's get into today's featured film then, as we conclude Cops and Mobsters Month, as we're going back to 2006 and talking the best picture winner for that year with Martin Scorsese's The Departed. And you know what? I guess I'll summarize. I haven't summarized in a while. I'll let you guys do the last couple weeks. Basically, this movie tells the story of the Boston crime unit that's trying to catch Costello, who's a mob boss, kind of running drugs and whatever, you name it. The police want to put an undercover unit into Costello's crew, which is Billy Costigan, which is played by Leonardo DiCaprio. And so he goes undercover to try to find out what he can about Costello's operations. On the flip side of that, though, Costello's got a mole in the police unit, which is Matt Damon's character of Colin. And so the story is told from the perspective of these two officers on both sides, as they're trying to essentially catch each other, find out who the mole is, find out who the rat is, and then meanwhile keeping their own personal lives intact and their sanity, and along with dealing with other units. The Queenan is the captain, played by Martin Sheen, and his sideman Dingham is played by Mark Wahlberg, and they're in charge of the undercovers. And so it becomes this war of wits and just intrigue around all these characters thrown into this mix of trying to basically want stay alive and kill each other and trap each other all at the same time. And it's told from an excellent direction perspective from Martin Scorsese. It's an extremely well-acted film, and that's what we're talking about today, is The Departed. And I know that that summary kind of might have been a little all over the place, but that's how this movie is. This movie is like a anxiety attack waiting to happen, but it all somehow unfolds in the way you want it to. When I first saw The Departed, I knew it was a remake of the Hong Kong film Infernal Affairs, which I had seen before I saw The Departed, and I really enjoyed Infernal Affairs. It's an excellent film and highly recommended watching it. And the amazing thing is Martin Scorsese swears he never saw Infernal Affairs before he filmed The Departed, but yet there's a couple of camera shots in this film that are exactly like it, Infernal Affairs. The biggest example is that is whenever Billy sees the envelope on Colin's desk that says citizens and it has their social security numbers in it. There's a scene in Infernal Affairs is exactly the same, where Tony Long's character sees the envelope on the desk and he freaks out and he runs out of the building. So I'm like, wow, it amazes me that Scorsese, that some camera operator or cinematographer on this set had to have seen Infernal Affairs, because there are some scenes that are just exactly the same.
Well, I'm sure the cinematographer does.
Yeah.
Because, really, I mean, I know the director is given credit for camera angles
right.
and stuff, but mm-hmm. it's actually, you know, the cinematographer that sets up all of that stuff. Film.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the director will want a certain look, but it's the cinematographer that, mm-hmm. you know, officially gets it set and fights for certain, you know, lighting and all that stuff. So
yeah, for yeah, sure.
So.
And
I bet you the cinematographer's probably seen the movie more so.
Right. So yeah. I saw this movie in theaters. I mean, I remember when this first trailer first came out, I was like, man, I'm not missing this. It just looked like a movie you had to see. And you know, it's funny, when it came out, I didn't think of it as a Best Picture winner. And then it started gaining a lot of ground that year towards the Oscars. It started getting a lot of notice for how well it was done. And then it kind of felt like a career award for Scorsese, too, to win Best Director, because he's arguably done better movies than this, but I still like The Departed a lot. Did either of y'all see it in theaters?
No, I saw it on home video.
Yeah,
I saw it when it came to home video as well.
Do people still call it home video? Going to Blockbuster?
At that time, it's like home DVD, I guess.
Yeah, there were still rental places in 2006-07, but yeah.
Yeah.
But
I remember it's always been on my must-watch lists, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, it's
took me about a year or two to finally watch it.
It's a hell of a cast. I mean, you got Leonardo DiCaprio, Matt Damon, Alec Baldwin, Mark Wahlberg, Martin Sheen, Jack Nicholson, who's always great, Ray Winstone, who plays Jack's second in command, and he's Winstone's performance in this is almost comical, but also really serious. Like Leo will sit down at the table and there's Frenchie just staring at him. And it's just like, he looks at him like, what? It's just, there's like a real dark humor to this movie too.
Yeah.
Of course, Jack is fantastic in this film.
Did he get a nomination for this?
I can't. I'd have to look it up. I don't remember. He may have, but especially the scene where he's telling Bill, he goes, "Man, I have a rat in my crew," and he's making this rat face, and it's just like, it's really well done.
Yeah, and this is like the only time that Nicholson is directed by Scorsese. Mm-hmm. Huh?
Yeah, yeah, and he almost didn't want to do the film, but then he realized, he's like, you know what? It's a chance to work with Martin. And Jack really liked Leo's work as a young actor, and Leonardo DiCaprio to this day calls this the highlight of his career, getting to work with Jack. And he said he was so nervous the first time he sat down that he didn't know what to do. And Jack put his hand on his shoulder and said, "Hey man, you know, just do your job. You'll be all right." And he said, "Just relax, Leo." And Jack talked to him like a friend, and it all worked out from there, you know?
Yeah. And I heard Jack Nicholson's like one of the most generous mm-hmm. actors to work with, you know, despite his on-screen persona.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm. yeah, I've heard things about Jack too that said, like, you know, Jack always kept his private life kind of quiet over the years, but they said he was just always one of the friendliest people. He took care of people on set. You know, he just was always calm and cool about things, and he was professional. He came in and did his job, but he would also look out for, you know, young people and things like that. And I remember reading somewhere that's where Tom Cruise kind of got how he is when he worked with Jack on A Few Good Men. He said he kind of learned that from him, just to, you know, treat everybody good on set and make sure you look out for even the small people, because everyone's there to make this film, you know, and just because you're the star doesn't mean other people aren't important.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well. Yeah.
But yeah, there's some standout moments. And one of the things that I will not forget about this movie, and it reminds me again of rewatching it, 10 years after seeing the first time, is how intense this movie is. Oh my lord!
Very intense.
I am so glad I am not an undercover police officer.
Yeah,
that looks like the hardest job in the world. And then you're witnessing crime happen, and then you're trying to keep yourself from committing
freaking
yeah. But unfortunately for Leo, I mean, he had to do what he had to do to keep his cover. So, and the one thing that I'm sure you guys will agree with is the fact that Leo's performance in this movie is so strong and so intense that it overshadows Matt Damon's part of the story.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, Matt.
Yeah, I mean,
Matt Damon's really good in this too. Yeah.
He's good, but man, he doesn't. Not the caliber that Leo was doing it. Well,
when I was rewatching this week, you know, I know Leo won for The Revenant, but he's much better in this film. It's like he's so good in this movie, and it's amazing he didn't win for this. Because I called the movie an anxiety attack earlier. Leo even said playing the part was like an anxiety attack. And it shows on screen. He looks literally like he's fixing to burst at any moment and lose his shit. But somehow he's keeping it all together, you know?
Yeah.
And he's amazingly good in this movie. And it shows on screen. And so does and a lot of that. The actors, like Damon's good, but he's not great. Mark Wahlberg's actually really good in this movie. I know some people say he's playing himself, but maybe he is, but he's really good at playing himself. It's probably his best performance I've ever seen him do in a film.
Boston cop. Yeah, you could really typecast him as a Boston cop in a lot of movies.
You know, Alec Baldwin, who's not always known for being the best actor, he does a good job of this film as well, holding his own with all these great actors. I really like the scene where he loses his crap at the boatyard.
And he gets mad. You don't think Alec Baldwin's a good actor?
He's hit or miss. There's some movies he's good in. Sometimes Baldwin kind of mails it in, you know. But when he loses his shit and starts beating the hell out of the guy to set the camera to the spot, I think that scene's hilarious. And speaking of the Boston accents, Baldwin's goes in and out a bit. He doesn't always keep the accent real well. But then, like, Damon and DiCaprio and a lot of the actors do a really good job with their accents. Jack has his for part of the movie, and he kind of loses it towards the end. But I guess you can forgive it because it's Jack. It's like he just didn't feel like doing the accent anymore, I guess.
Martin Sheen was so good in this
film. Martin Sheen's excellent in the movie, too. I've always liked Martin Sheen as an actor. I think he's always... He's kind of like your granddad actor. He always has a good presence on screen, and he's always
been consistent in any performance I've seen him in. Yeah.
And unfortunately, he goes to a brutal death in this movie, but he's good in the film. And it's almost
when he died, my my view as him as a ray of hope
right.
in the movie died with him.
Well, you're
you know,
exactly.
Like, oh, God, he's dead, and he's the only person that can get him out. You
and
know?
He's always kind of patting Leo on the back, like, hey, I'm going to take care of you and everything. So you're right. When he dies, the whole movie goes into chaos from that point on, the last 40 minutes of the film.
Yeah.
And everything, his character, Queenan, kind of held it all together. And then it just starts falling apart. As soon
as he was the glue.
Yeah, Queenan dies. Demon gets suspended. And the two people that know Leo who he is aren't there anymore all of a sudden. And the movie just crumbles on itself. Not as a film, but the characters all start crumbling together at that point. And it leads to I know we talk about the ending of this movie. I know in the Infernal Affairs, the original film, the exact same thing happens when the character who plays that version of Billy is going up the stairs, he gets shot in the head. And it happened in this film too. And seeing it in theaters, I know you guys saw a video, you should have heard the air come out of the building when that happened in the theater. When Leo shot, it's just like, everyone's like, oh. I mean, it literally, I will never forget it. Everyone was like, oh my God, there's no buildup. He's the main character of this film. And all of a sudden, like that, in a snap, he's dead.
One control of the situation, and then boom.
And the title of the film is, of course, The Departed. And everyone at the end of this film, in the last 20 minutes, departs the film in various ways.
Yeah.
And you know, you don't have to like the ending, but if you really rewatch it this week, I think it makes sense. There was no way out of this for any of these characters. They're all... Billy is probably the only character that has some redeeming values because he's trying to hang on to it the whole time. But the rest of them are all despicable characters and get what they deserve. And the fact that Bill is the first one to die makes it more shocking. Then all the bad guys gets what's theirs towards the end of the film. Well, I mean, Costello had already died by the time Billy died, you know.
Yeah.
And Costello was based on a real mobster. Mm-hmm. Whitey Bulger. And you know, Johnny Depp had a stab at that character too in Black Mass. He was he was one of the most feared gangsters in Boston crime history. He was finally caught, 8 years ago or something?
I don't know. I really enjoy this movie quite a bit. It moves at a brisk pace. It's 2.5 hours, but it doesn't feel like it at all. It moves quick. It's so well paced. I noticed rewatching too that Scorsese uses some interesting camera stuff in this. Like, there's parts of this film where he used sped up cameras. You can tell. And I didn't notice it watching it in the past, but I noticed it rewatching it. Maybe it was the HD on Netflix or something, but I noticed there's some scenes in this film that are shot with sped up cameras. Which is interesting for Scorsese's direction because he's usually a pretty classic director. You know, but overall, though, I still like the style of the film. y'all can keep talking.
Oh, sorry.
Well, you were in mid-sentence. Well, how were we supposed
to... Oh, no.
Anyways, you know I was shitting on the ending all week, and then I rewatched it, and I've forgotten that, hey, wait a minute. Yeah, I was pissed off that Billy died, but yeah, I'm glad that, you know, Mark Wahlberg's character finally got the last act in it, killed someone who really deserved it, you know. I was like, oh... I remember the first time I'm watching it, it's like, oh my God, if Matt Damon's character survives this movie, I'm going to freaking shit on this movie forever. But thankfully, it was his death came pretty quickly too. And it was so quick, I've forgotten that it was Mark Wahlberg's character that pulled the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know why I didn't remember that. That's so weird. But it's been 10 years, so.
If I remember right, I think in Infernal Affairs, I think the snitch gets away. If I remember right, I'd have to go back and watch it. Yeah.
Isn't Tony Leung in that one?
Yeah, he's in it.
Yeah.
And it's actually, there's three films in the original Infernal Affairs trilogy, and The Departed actually takes parts of the second one and the first one and mixes them together. Because, like, the second one is a prequel that kind of tells how that he gets undercover and stuff. So they kind of blended the first, you know, 20 minutes of this film as of Inferno Part 2 into this film, you know, kind of blended those two stories. But those are definitely worth watching. Infernal Affairs 1 was on Netflix for the longest time. I don't know if it still is or not, but they're definitely worth seeking out and watching. You know, just compare and contrast to the Scorsese version of this story.
All right.
Did Billy knock up the psychiatrist, and that's who really is the...
Well, they leave that kind of open, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I get from it.
Vera Farmiga, by the way, she was very young in this film.
Yeah, she's very good in the movie, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They kind of leave that open to whose baby it might be, you know. But either way, they both were dead, so she was having a baby by herself with neither one of them. So,
yeah.
You know. And, yeah, interesting lovemaking scene in the film with Roy Orbison's version of Comfortably Numb. I thought that was an odd take on that song. You know, nothing against Roy Orbison, but he just, not so sure he pulls off the Pink Floyd. It's kind of weird. It just sounds off. You know, like, it just doesn't seem like the voice that, you know, he's not Roger Waters or David Gilmour, so I don't know. Just my thinking on that little music note
there. I'm not familiar with Pink Floyd's music, so for me it was
So, you know. But man, overall though, I think this is a great film. You could argue it's definitely amongst Scorsese's best. It's my personal favorite Scorsese film. You know, I know everyone loves Goodfellas and Casino and stuff, but I really like The Departed. I think it's my favorite Scorsese movie. I think part of it's just because it's so well acted, it's so intense, great performances. And a really cool story, too. Even if it doesn't work out for everybody at the end, it's still a great story. You know? Mm-hmm. And I give this a solid A+, man. I think this is a great movie.
Yeah, for sure. What I have to say also with this movie, as a post thoughts on it, this movie, before I watched this movie, I was like, I hate Leo DiCaprio, no matter what he does. But this is the movie that turned me around on him as an actor. And I'm like, okay, all right. That his acting was so good in it that I have to the fact that give him a chance again as an actor, or finally give him a fair shot. And from that point on, I was like, okay, I definitely respect Leo a lot. Yeah. I don't hate him anymore. So, he's had a really good run of good movies after Departed, The Departed, and then what, The Aviator.
The Aviator was really good.
Bunch of Quentin Tarantino movies.
Yeah.
So,
well, you know, and like when he first worked with Scorsese in Gangs of New York, you could kind of tell he's good in it, but you could tell he's like not as good as he became. And Daniel Day-Lewis is so good in Gangs of New York that he overshadows everybody. You know?
Oh, yeah. And, man. Yeah.
Oh, that's one of the great villain performances of all time, and Bill the Butcher. You know, but yeah, Leo definitely, man. I mean, he's come a long way from, you know, and he's not bad as Jack in Titanic, and he was really good at What's Eating Gilbert Grape, but he has become he's one of the best actors of our generation. There's no doubt. I mean, you know, I look forward to Killers of the Flower Moon, his next movie he's doing with Scorsese. He's got a comedy coming to Netflix later this year from director Adam McKay. So he's got some stuff. I thought The Revenant was okay. You know, he's good in a movie. I just, you know, and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, he's absolutely amazing in it. I mean, he's so good in that film. You saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, right, Mong? Did you watch it
yet? Not yet.
You haven't seen it? Oh, man. There's a scene in that movie where he's acting in the movie, and it's just like it's so good. You know, such an excellent movie. So, but yeah, Leo's a good actor. I like the stuff he does. And like, Catch Me If You Can came out for this. You don't like him in Catch Me If You Can? That came out before The Departed.
I've never seen that movie.
You've never seen Catch Me If
You Can? Only bits and pieces.
We'll do it one day. Oh, man, we're definitely going to do that one day.
That's a good movie, too. Yeah, we got to do it. We got two Spielberg movies coming up in a matter of like 4 weeks here soon, but we'll have to do it one day. And as Matt just clicked off for a second. Yeah, well, your camera disappeared for a minute, Matt. I didn't hear half of what you said, but I'm sure it recorded.
Yeah, so. Probably. Yeah, I had a little hiccup here, too.
But well, let's do today's top five then. Since The Departed is based on a Hong Kong film called Infernal Affairs, we thought we would look back at our top five favorite remakes that have been made. And don't worry, you're not going to find any RoboCop remakes on our list. Not that I hated the RoboCop remake, but you know, Hollywood went through a trend in the last decade or so where we got a lot of really bad remakes. But there are some good ones out there. I have one. I'll start today. I haven't started in a while. I have one honorable mention on my list, and that is the Coen brothers' version of True Grit, which I thought
was a great movie.
Really well done. And it could easily be on this list, but I put it as my honorable mention. But at number five, I have the 2019 version of A Star Is Born. You know, that movie's been made like four times, but the Bradley Cooper, Lady Gaga version is it's a great film. I mean, Bradley Cooper's direction is excellent. His performance is excellent. Lady Gaga's excellent. You know, not necessarily a movie we don't cover on this show because it's more of a romantic drama, you know, so it's not something we necessarily cover, but it truly is a great film with great performances and a great remake and probably the best version of A Star Is Born that's been made.
Yeah. So that was your honorable mention?
That was my number five.
Okay.
I kicked this off today.
My number five is Magnificent Seven, based on Seven Samurai.
The 1960s version, right?
Right. Yeah, with starring Yul Brynner.
Yeah, not the Chris Pratt version.
The Chris Pratt version.
It's not terrible.
No.
But it's not the 1960s version, yeah.
Right. The third act of that it's just a mess.
It becomes an action movie, yeah.
Yeah. And you don't know what's going on really. That's my number five. It's Magnificent Seven.
It's a great movie.
My number five, I've got a film that we covered not too long ago, and that's 310 to Yuma. Felt like that was a really strong remake. It's a movie that I watch at least once or twice a year if I want to see a nice shootout.
Nice.
At number four, I have Let Me In, the remake of the Swedish film Let the Right One In. It's almost a shot-for-shot remake in some ways, but it has some differences in it. It's directed by Matt Reeves, of course, before he went on to do the Planet of the Apes movies and is doing the next Batman film. And it stars Chloe Moretz, I don't remember her full name.
Chloe Grace.
That's right. As the vampire in the film. And she's really eerily, scarily good in the movie as the vampire. And just, it's a solid remake, Let Me In. You know, I still prefer the Swedish version a little bit over it, but the American version's pretty damn good, too.
My number four is Sergio Leone's For a Few Dollars More, based on Kurosawa's Yojimbo, and that's one of my favorite remakes, starring Clint Eastwood. Great Western. Unfortunately, I guess it was so similar to Yojimbo that Toho Studios sued the movie studio that made For a Few Dollars More and actually won.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But anyways, I thought it was kind of unfair, but it's still part of our film history, thankfully. And they just owed royalties to Toho. But anyways, For a Few Dollars More, that's my number four.
Nice. My number four, I've got Heat, the remake of LA Takedown, which was going to be a movie. And then they ended up being a TV movie. It's almost shot for shot for Heat, especially the confrontation between De Niro's character and Pacino's character. But yeah, Heat.
At number three, I have I've never seen the original, but everyone says this one's better, and I've seen this one. That is David Cronenberg's The Fly with Jeff Goldblum from 86, a movie we've talked about doing before and might show up on Halloween Horrors this year. But such a creepy, scary, good film. as you watch Jeff Goldblum transform into The Fly, it's gross as hell, but a good movie. Yeah, you know. And the most and Cronenberg is known for making some really weird, odd films. But The Fly, as gross as it is, might be his most successful film in a lot of ways too.
I don't know if this should be counted or not, but my number three is Casino Royale. There is actually an original Casino Royale movie starring David Niven, from 1962, but the Casino Royale that came out in mid-2000s starring Daniel Craig was pretty much kind of a remake, I think.
It's a remake by title, where the Daniel Craig one is closer to the novel version of Casino Royale than the original. Because the original wasn't kind of like a comedy. We'll let you have it, even though it's loose.
For me, my number three, I've never seen the original, but I've seen like little parts of it. But I've got The Thing. Now, obviously, the big difference is that
That's so good.
The first thing was a plant, and you had to kill it with fire, basically. And this one, The Thing possessed people. So, we covered it last year. Great movie, great sci-fi effects.
Go ahead, Mark.
Sorry. At number two, I have the movie we just talked about, The Departed. I know it's not a straight remake of Infernal Affairs, but it's still very close thematically in some shots in the film. Honestly, I like The Departed more than the film I picked at number one, but I got to give the film at number one a little more credit for being such a great remake. But The Departed at number two.
My number two is...
Don't say Godzilla.
There is no Godzilla remake.
Well, I mean, the 2014 version was a reboot
Reboot, but not a remake. Yeah.
Yeah.
We can all get into a debate of reboot versus remake. That could take up a whole episode. But number two is Alien. It's actually a remake or loosely inspired by a 1950s space horror movie as well. It came from outer space. But it's the same premise. Astronauts are on the spaceship. And they're stuck with an alien that's hunting them down. But the Alien is a remake of that old 50s movie. It has to be. It came from outer space.
Could be.
Yeah. But that's my number two.
Nice. My number two, Long, I went with your pick at number three. And I've got Casino Royale as number two. I've only seen bits and pieces of the first one, and I think it was wasn't it a TV movie? Basically, Mark.
Nah, it was. It had to do with keeping the rights to James Bond at the time, and I think it got made I don't even think it had a release theatrically in the U.S. I think it was released theatrically in Europe, so it might have been a TV movie in the U.S. Might have been something like that. Yeah,
I know the U.S. tried to reproduce it.
Yeah,
I think they put Dean Martin in there, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most hardcore Bond fans don't even recognize or even talk about it, really, because it's not very good, the original,
Yeah.
At number one, I have John Carpenter's The Thing. I mean, it's one of the quintessential remakes ever made. It's such a great movie. And I've seen the original, and the original is okay. It's definitely has that 1950s horror feel to it, but the remake's extraordinarily well done. And we talked about it last year on Halloween Horrors Month, and Long had never seen it before until last year. Well, Matt, well, that was your first time watching it too last year, or you had seen it before?
The thing. I had seen it once before.
So y'all know how good it is, man. Just that's how you do a remake, is you call John Carpenter and you say, "Hey, remake my film."
Yeah, that's not a bad way to go about it.
Yeah.
Oh, my number one is going to be off the beaten path a little bit. And I'm going to go with a spoof comedy called Airplane. Airplane is actually a remake of a 1957 TV movie called Zero Hour. Shot by shot remake, except in the comedy lens. But bam.
One of these days, we're going to have to do Airplane.
Yeah, for sure. Airplane or Hot Shots or Loaded Weapon.
I went with for my number one, I went with a remake of a French film, and that is True Lies, the remake of La Totale.
But it's such a loose remake, though.
some parts of it are, well, yeah. The general theme is what it's based off of, the husband who's a spy.
Yeah, it's more like it's more of an inspired by than it is a remake.
Yeah.
That's another debate. You have reboots, you have remakes, you have inspired bys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of those Casino Royale kind of falls within those guidelines.
Remember when Vince Vaughn starred in a shot-by-shot remake of Psycho?
Yeah,
I just didn't like him as the role. You know,
it's shot for shot.
But it's like, I don't know.
Gus Van Sant said it was the biggest mistake of his career. He should have shot the film himself instead of doing it shot by shot. Because he was a hot director at the time, and that movie bombed, and it. He even talked about how it cost him some jobs after that, you know. So he was like, "I'll never do a movie shot by shot again like that. I'll just direct it myself." But apparently, the studio wanted a shot by shot remake. So it happens. Well, let's do some news. Lots of Marvel news, honestly. It's almost all Marvel news that I wrote down.
Mm-hmm.
We got a trailer for the next Marvel film after Black Widow. We got a trailer for Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, right? Yeah, it's a long time.
Yeah.
man, I thought the trailer was really cool, man. I was like, man, a martial arts movie in the Marvel Universe. And just from the looks of the trailer, it looks like they used real martial arts, no wire work, you know, from what I could gather. And I'm like, thank goodness this isn't people jumping around a wire.
Dude, I prefer wire work.
Really?
You know? I don't know.
I'd rather it look real. No,
well, I'm talking about wire work as a practical effect, not wire work as a CGI effect.
Well, like in the Kingsman, where it's using CGI effect.
Yeah, and have you seen modern Chinese kung fu movies lately?
I don't think I've seen any modern
ones. It's terrible, Mark. It's like they are so heavily reliant on CGI. It's over the top. It's cringe, you know?
Yeah.
And they just they abuse the whole CGI thing to the point where, okay, I'm watching this martial arts movie, but I don't feel anything. I don't feel the impact. It's too floaty. And personally, I prefer, the wire work from The Matrix, even Crouching Tiger, and even the Hong Kong wire work.
Well, yeah, you know, some of that.
Yeah.
But then there's stuff in like the Kingsman, where they use the wire work just to move them around and make them look like they're moving fast. I don't like that kind of stuff, you know? It just comes
across. Because white people were directing it. That's why.
White people.
No, I'm joking.
Well, you're not wrong. I mean, you know, it was... who was that that directed that? Fuck, man. Matthew Vaughn. Yeah, he directed the Kingsman.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Vaughn.
But, you know. But, yeah.
Tell me, Yung Wo Ping was... If they slap his name for fight coordinator, then we're seeing some action, you know. So,
but anyways. So what'd you guys think about the trailer though, overall?
I'm excited to see Tony Leung do his Western debut finally.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I'm so looking forward to seeing him. I grew up watching his Hong Kong movies and TV shows as a kid. And he's definitely one of the best actors in Asia.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, the martial arts look good in the trailer, and that's what I'm excited for. I want to see some martial arts fighting. Mm-hmm. And I'm with you, Mark. I like the practical stuff. You know, that looks real.
And a predominantly Asian cast, and you know, there's a lot of hope. You know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is such a huge thing right now, making a lot of money. Unfortunately, you know, the box office has been hit during the COVID pandemic, but there's a lot of hope that this movie does, you know, for superheroes and the Asian market that Black Panther did, you know, and I hope so. I think Shang-Chi, if it's a good film, it can make a lot of money and bring a lot of attention to that stuff. And I think it's a good thing. I think the cast looks excellent. You know, I didn't even realize Michelle Yeoh's in it too, I think, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a great cast, you know. And I like the guy they got to play Shang-Chi. He's been very active on Twitter and very excited about the film. And he's been, he tweeted out a couple years ago asking Marvel to play the part. And then a couple years later, he retweeted it when he got cast. It was like, look, I got it. You know, I thought that was really cool. You know, so he, Sam Liu, I think is his name. Yeah, he kind of campaigned himself for the part and he got it. So it looks like a fun movie. And I like it too because it looks like something different than, you know, like this Black Widow movie that's coming out. You know, I'll watch it, but it just looks like the same stuff we've seen. And I think Shang-Chi looks like it's going to provide something kind of new and exciting to the Marvel Universe. And the Marvel Universe kind of needs something new and exciting right now. You know?
Yeah. Dark.
And then we're going to stay in the Marvel Universe for a minute. James Gunn has been doing a little talking lately about the Suicide Squad coming out in August. You know, the movie, you know, the Suicide Squad's been sitting on the shelf for like 6 months. The movie's been done, and so he's starting to work on Guardians 3, and it looks like we're not going to get Guardians 3, though, till 2023, unfortunately. But we are going to get a Guardians holiday special, and I didn't realize this is going to be a live-action special on Disney+. Plus. But it's not going to be out till next Christmas, 2022.
I thought that was a joke.
No, it's a real thing, and he says what they're going to do is... I guess they hope to start Guardians 3 production later this year, and they're going to film the holiday special when they film Guardians 3. So, and it's going to be out on Disney Plus next year, and it's going to be like kind of a prequel to Guardians 3. So, got to wait a little bit for that next Guardians film. Some of that's Marvel's fault, let's be honest. I mean, they fired James Gunn, then they decided to rehire him, but James Gunn was like, wait, I'm going to go make Suicide Squad for DC, so you got to wait on me. And, so really, Marvel only has themselves to blame for us having to wait a little longer on Guardians 3.
That's true.
But at least they brought him back. And I think a lot of that had to do with Dave Bautista and Zoe Saldana, them saying, like, basically, hey, we're not going to work if you don't bring James back. So I think they had a lot to do with it.
That was the dumbest thing. It's like they made him apologize for it before they hired him. And then someone brings it up on Twitter. And they're like, oh,
idiot right winger.
Yeah, for real. And
former rapist.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry for what he did to you, Long. But
fuck you, Matt. Fuck you, Matt. Fuck you.
On that note, there's gonna be a Captain America 4 movie. Announced kind of today after the Falcon Winter Soldier episode 6 premiered. The writers from the Falcon Winter Soldier are going to work on a fourth Captain America film. Of course, no official details yet, no official directors attached or when this is coming out, but let's be honest, we know it's going to star Anthony Mackie as the new Captain America, because why shouldn't it? He deserves it after the 6-episode show. And I think that would be a really cool thing and really exciting. And, I'm all for that. You know, I've always liked the character. I wouldn't say I love the character Captain America, but I always thought he was cool. But I really like what Chris Evans did with it. And I like the fact that, you know, Marvel to me did what, you know, DC has tried to do with Superman, to not make Superman such a Boy Scout. Captain America was always a Boy Scout of the comics, but the MCU has done a great job of making Captain America not just a Boy Scout, but also a badass that you respect. So I'm very glad that the character is going to be carried on through Anthony Mackie's character, Sam Wilson, and we'll get more Captain America on the big screen when Captain America 4 hits, whenever that is. And so I'm excited for that. And the last bit of news I had is we've switched to we're still Marvel. It's all Marvel news this week. Russell Crowe has been talking about his part in Thor: Love and Thunder, and he basically spilled the beans that he's playing Zeus, which is one of Odin's rivals in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And so not sure how he's going to play into it, but interesting that, you know, it's funny how all these big name actors now are becoming part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Crowe is now part of both universes because he's part of DC as well. And, you know, Christian Bale, of course, is playing the bad guy in the film. So Taika Waititi, I always say his name wrong, is coming back to direct. And so we will get Russell Crowe's Zeus in Thor: Love and Thunder.
Unless he's lying.
That comes out next year, right? Yeah. Because I didn't realize we have technically there's four Marvel films coming out this year, and they're all he's got Black Widow, Shang-Chi, The Eternals is still due in November, and yeah. then Spider-Man 3 is in December. So there's four Marvel films coming out. That's crazy. But hey, after a year and a half of basically no films, it's like, hey, let's finally get some stuff out there. That's it, man.
Oh. Yep, and Godzilla versus Kong saved cinema.
Oh, Lord.
Dude, so it was packed, man.
What movie are we doing next week? Okay, I didn't even know. We're getting out of Cops and Bobsters month, and we're going to do some fun genre films, not so much rated R stuff, as we get close to 250 episodes. And so next week, this is a movie we were going to do about a month ago after the breaking up of Daft Punk, because they did the soundtrack for this movie. And we also just wanted to do it because it's a cool movie. And we did the first Tron a couple years back. So we're going to do Tron Legacy on next week's show.
I promised you that if I ever got any information about your dad, I'd tell you first, right? I was paged last night. Came from your dad's office at the arcade.
So?
So? The number's been disconnected for 20 years. Two nights before he disappeared, he came to my house. He said he was about to change everything. Science, medicine, religion. He wouldn't have left that, Sam. He wouldn't have left you.
Alan, you're acting like I'm gonna find him sitting there working. Just, hey, kiddo, lost track of time.
Wouldn't that be something?
So before we get into that, before you sign off, at the end of this month, what was your favorite movie that you reviewed with you guys here? Matt, what was the best movie that you felt?
Oh, jeez. Was it a... Man, I felt like Heat was really good. Just rewatching Heat and just watching De Niro and Pacino and Val Kilmer... and just the shootout scene, I really like that, and just the lessons and the themes that you learn from each character. That was a good film. I like that one.
How about you, Mark?
I
mean, you've seen these movies. So.
I enjoyed today's show talking about one of my favorite Scorsese films, but I really like. I really enjoyed rewatching L.A. Confidential and hearing y'all's thoughts on it because I've never seen it before because I think it's such a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
Great performances. I like Heat, but I still find Heat difficult to watch just because it's very slow in a lot of parts. And then once you get to the diner, the bank robbery, then it picks up. A lot of times with Heat, it's hard for me to pay any attention to the first hour because nothing happens. I still think it's a good film. And Lethal Weapon, I've seen that so many times that, it's always fun to revisit. But really, I think last week's L.A. Confidential was probably the most fun.
For me, that movie for me was my favorite to review this month because I've never seen it.
Yeah.
And I've always heard about a lot about that movie. And I was glad I was able to finally watch it. And yeah, it's a very good movie. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize it was a 2.5 hour movie too, so it goes by quick.
Yes, we did some long movies this month with Heat, LA Confidential, and then The Departed. But
Lethal Weapon was this another one that I've never watched from beginning to end, and I thought that was a good movie, interesting movie for sure. Mm-hmm. LA Confidential for me was definitely my top pick, and The Departed was a surprise again for me to rewatch. Even though I hated the ending at first, but rewatching it again, it kind of taken the edge off a bit for me personally.
Yeah, it's one of those movies that the first time you see it, the ending is quite shocking because everything happens so fast, everyone's dying. And when you go back and rewatch it, you see what these characters go through, and I think you accept it anymore because you know there's no, like I said during the review, there's no way out of it for any of them. I mean, even if Billy gets his identity back, he's always going to have someone after him because someone in Costello's crew is going to find out because Costello's crew isn't all wiped out. There's probably people out there. So you just know there's no way it could end well for any of them, unfortunately. You know? And it's like Jack says early on in the film, he goes, whenever he says, my mom's on her way out, he says, we all are, act accordingly. You know, it sums up the film right there. You know? And
we all are, act accordingly.
One of Jack's great lines in the movie. But yeah, so next week we're going to get out of Cops and Mobsters and talk Tron Legacy, which is I think Tron Legacy is better than people gave it credit for. And, you know, and I actually saw it in theaters in 3D, and I thought it was a really fun movie. And so we'll talk some good science fiction next week and revisit Tron. One of the first movies that used de-aging technology for Jeff Bridges' character. So that'll be interesting to look back on that and talk about it. Of course, it's on Disney Plus, so you know you can watch along with us and come back next week when we talk Tron Legacy. And so that's next week's show. But until then, TheRebelRadioPodcast.com for all your needs. Thanks as always for listening. We appreciate the support as we approach 7 years since we started this thing, man, and getting close to 250 episodes. It's all coming up. So it's pretty wild. And this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
This is Long, the Departed.
We are departing you now. Good night. Be safe. Good day. And just go there and do it.
And do it.
Do it.